Round two of the presidential debates takes place tomorrow evening on Long Island, and it is almost a certainty that the candidates will carry on about what they have both described as American exceptionalism. But for commentator Plathal Benjamin, it is a concept that rings hollow.
The great danger in the bogus doctrine of American exceptionalism lies in the fact that this myth is widely regarded as fact, and even serves as the basis for policy decisions in both domestic and foreign affairs. It is at the root of the belief that Americans are superior to other people in the world, and undergirds what Dr. Henry Kissinger has recently called the evangelical character of American foreign policy, which justifies American interventionism all over the globe. One need only listen to the explanations given by American policymakers who speak casually about attacking Iran because they believe they're developing the capability to make one bomb, even while the U.S. has tens of thousands of advanced nuclear weapons, as well as weaponized germs and poison gases in large quantities, most of which are U.S. inventions, to recognize the danger of this conception of American civilization. But uprooting this false and dangerous doctrine is no easy task, because so many white Americans have an emotional investment in it. Consider the following commentary written in the August Sunday's New York Times by Christina Freeland, titled The Self-Destruction of the 1%, an excerpt from her learned book about how greedy elites self-destruct, plutocrats, the rise of the new global super-rich, and the fall of everyone else. In the early 19th century, Ms. Freeland writes, the United States is one of the most egalitarian societies on the planet. We have no paupers, Thomas Jefferson boasted in an 1814 letter. The great mass of our population is of laborers, our rich, who can live without labor, either manual or professional, being few. Most of the laboring class possess property, cultivate their own lands, have families, and from the demands of their labor, unable to extract from the rich and the competent such prices as enable them to be fed abundantly, clothed above mere decency, to labor moderately and raise their families, end of quote. Ms. Freeland goes on to observe, without a hint of embarrassment or shame, for Jefferson, this equality was at the heart of American exceptionalism. Alas, this passage from Jefferson's letter reveals that even the smartest white Americans were as deluded about American reality at the founding of the Republic as they are today. The wealth of the colony of Virginia, where Jefferson lived at the time, was based on the labor of African slaves and their American descendants, who were neither well-fed nor well-clothed, nor were their families recognized under the law. In fact, they were classified as livestock, which is why plantation owners could sell their children like piglets. Furthermore, poor whites could not bargain for fair wages because they were competing with a workforce that was working for free. And all of the prattle about the land they owned conveniently overlooked the fact that the whites acquired it through genocide against Native Americans and the greatest land theft in history. Jefferson, who owned 200 slaves, and sired 7 children by a slave concubine, all of whom remained his slaves until he died, acknowledged these crimes when he lamented, I shudder for my country when I reflect upon the fact that God is just. Failure to admit these facts is the reason why Americans refuse to recognize the role of historic and present racism in producing the dismal statistics regarding health, wealth, education, employment, incarceration, and life expectancy among the Afro-American, Native American, and Hispanic populations, and to a growing degree, the white working class. Hence, the problems persist. The great 20th century Afro-American novelist and essayist James Baldwin put it best in a speech to a group of white New York City school teachers in 1964. If you have to lie about anybody's history, said Baldwin, you have to lie about it all. And if I'm not what I have been told I am, you are not what you have been told you are either. From New York City, this is Plathal Benjamin with a commentary on the Times.